Finding trusted, faith-building entertainment for your kids is easy with the Adventures in Odyssey Club. It's an online community with almost every episode ever and a Focus on the Family Clubhouse magazine subscription. AIOclub.org/radio.
I think the biggest way in which my life has changed since I've become a mom is that I can no longer ever in my life be first.
What I thought was busy before I had children, I had no concept of what it really is.
Biggest change is that my time is not my own now. It belongs to my family.
I never realized how selfish I was until I had my own children.
I had the ability to remember a lot of numbers and other details, and when I had children, my memory cells are now used for other things, and I can't remember nothing.
I can be a husband and father and have that one, right?
I think a lot of us can relate to that, but that is especially the challenge of a mom, and maybe you've had some thoughts and feelings like those in your own motherhood journey. This is Focus on the Family, and we're going to explore some of the challenges and joys of being a mom and give you some wonderful encouragement along the way. I'm John Fuller, and your host is Focus President and author Jim Daly.
John, I'm ready to make a declaration. We love moms at Focus on the Family, and that's about 70% of the audience. So we always want to connect with you, and today is that program where we plan and hope to connect directly with you. In fact, we have a wonderful guest, Sarah Parshall Perry. She's written this wonderful book, Mommy Needs a Raise. Okay, I heard it. Did you hear it? Everybody just said amen. Amen, brother.
Moms are leaning in on that one.
And we want to talk about those things that, sometimes are difficult. They're a struggle. And we want to urge husbands and men to listen in, too, because this is a great opportunity to learn more about how your wife, the mother of your children, how she's thinking. And that is a good thing, a little insider information. So sit back, grab a cup of tea or coffee, and let's talk to Sarah.
And she is an author and a mom, and she's been a lawyer and a professor, and she and her husband Matt have three children, Noah, Grace, and Jesse. And as you said, Jim, the book is Mommy Needs a Raise Because Quitting's Not an Option, and we do have copies of that at focusonthefamily.com/broadcast.
Sarah, welcome to Focus.
Thank you for having me.
Now, you say quitting's not an option, but I think in your book, I'll just start right here. There was a day in your mommyhood that you yelled something. And what was that?
It was, I quit. I don't want to mother anymore. And unfortunately, because of the circumstances of that day, my husband, who travels frequently for work, was gone. There were three children with a stomach flu, and I had one of them in the bathtub
when
the shower curtain collapsed on both of us. And he was fine, but it was at that point where I hadn't slept or showered in 3 days that I said, I quit. I cannot do this anymore.
What did your son say?
Too bad. You got to do this.
He's a taskmaster.
Yes, he is.
You got to do this, Mommy.
And this was followed probably a few weeks later by a question. So what do you do, Mom? Are you like a maid or a babysitter? And after thinking, I said, well, kind of a little bit of both. So
a gentle answer.
There you go.
But
there
now,
you go.
You know, some moms hearing what John just described, you're a lawyer, you train, you sound like you achieve things corporately and in a career. Talk about that angst between the two. I mean, you're in a professional environment, driving toward a goal, prepping witnesses or whatever you're doing as an attorney, going after the bad people. And then here you become a mom and you decide, I think wonderfully, thank you, congratulations, you see the most important job, raising your kids.
Yes.
And how different is it?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I tell you what, it was so different that I had to write a book about it. I couldn't find any other stories about a mom who had children later in life. So my first was at 30, and I was done at almost 36. So I had spent so much time in undergrad and in graduate school and then in the workforce that by the time I came around to staying home with kids, my entire world was thrown upside down. You know, you think you're going to be better prepared the older you are, the more books you read.
Sounds good.
Right. And yet it is the one profession for which you cannot prepare by reading or studying. It must be experienced to become proficient. Mm. I was not used to that.
Yes.
I was very good at reading what I needed to read and preparing everything that I could control. I'm sure it does not surprise you. I'm a bit of a control freak based on what you've just
it's
read.
It's perfect for a mom.
It's perfect, right? There's absolutely no conflict, right?
That works.
Right?
Yeah.
And I realized very quickly it was like jumping out of an airplane without a parachute and trusting God to catch the fall. So that was
that sounds
was the
a little
change.
Desperate.
Right.
I'm just saying.
There were some desperate moments, but I will tell you, I think I struggled so much with the question of how to value what I did during the course of these repetitive days, that for me was sort of incentive enough to write the book, because yeah. I couldn't manage that divide between, okay, I get a paycheck and a pension and a 401k and I get accolades, and then suddenly you have little people and you're not always thanked for the grilled cheese. So that has a tendency to reorient your thinking.
Especially when half of it's on you.
Right, right.
Hey, I want to go to a story that you used. I mean, it's a serious story, the Donner Party. You compare
yes.
the Donner Party, which
story.
Some people, you know, may not know about. I grew up in California, so the Donner Party
so
is like,
it.
You know, third grade history class. You
right.
get it right out of the chute. But parenting and motherhood like the Donner Party? First explain the Donner Party, then...
Well, I will tell you, during the California Gold Rush, there were a series of settlers who were trying to come from the Deep West out to California to more temperate climates to make their fortune. And they decided...
That still goes on today.
It does. It does indeed. Not always well-founded, but they decided they were going to take a shortcut through a pass that no one really had any experience with. And during the course of the shortcut, they were surprised by a blizzard. And the blizzard ended up wiping out almost the entirety of their party. And so they were down to base cannibalism
to survive. Yeah.
Now, the theory here is not that motherhood is like cannibalism, okay? But it is so surprising. It is something for which you wholly cannot prepare for. It is truly one of those trusting, faith-filled experiences where everything you can do beforehand, all of the books you read, all of the personality profiles that you can take, all of the perfect cribs and swings and bedding and all of the wipes, warmers, and toys that they tell you about do not prepare you for what it ultimately is like. And so the nature of surprise was such a huge theme in my life, because none of this I saw coming. I thought I did, but ironically, after spending so much time in a different environment, I was as ill-prepared as anyone else.
So the blizzard of parenting is maybe the analogy.
The surprise, absolutely.
Yeah. And try not to die doing
right,
it
right.
is the backup story there.
You will, if you walk out in faith and right. commit things to the Lord, you will make it to the other side.
Now, this gets us into the content of this great book. How do we make the mundane? How does a mother make that mundane routine of motherhood, the sandwiches, you know, getting the kids out the door. Oh, then you turn around, you got all this stuff you got to clean up or take care of. And how do you make that enticing? How do you
right.
make that something you can get up for every day and feel like you're contributing?
I tell you what I had to do is I had to transfer the notion of value. So value was very concrete. It went from very predictable and specific and concrete to non-specific and non-predictable. And so I had to look beyond the daily doing of things, right? We as moms accomplish so much, but we have very little to show for it, right? So it's the same laundry, and it's the same dishes, and it's the same dressing and bathing and putting to sleep. And so if you're looking strictly at a task-based system, you will be very, very quickly frustrated. And so you have to look underneath those tasks to see the value in the stage that you're in with the people that you're raising. So you're going to feel very sort of unsubstantiated in the work that you do. And there will be a phase where it will feel very repetitive. It will feel very limiting. And yet you have to say to yourself, the value that I have are these little people
right.
that God has entrusted me with. They are the value of what I'm doing.
In fact, you say in the book there's these bonuses that moms get.
Oh,
I love
yes.
this. And this is the positive aspect of it, but they're kind of wrapped up in glimpses of heaven,
yes.
you call them. Describe some of those.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, I have this infatuation with my children. And it drives them crazy because even my 14-year-old, he walks in the door and I just squeeze and hug and kiss him and he can't stand it. And I do it anyway. Yeah. I think as long as you're under my roof, too bad. This is what you signed on for, right?
Just never at school.
Yes. And let me tell you, there are moments and it's almost as though the Lord's got a sense of when a mom needs encouragement most. And so he uses these children as his vessels, right? Yes. And he allows his glory to shine through them. And I'm telling you, I've had moments where I have been saying prayers with my kids and I get the youngest to wrap his arms around my neck and say, "You're the best mama in the whole world." And I think, that's it. You could not give me a raise, an accolade, a published account, anything. You could elect me president. This makes me happier. Mm. This is truly that experience where you think it's unprompted. And all of the virtue of that investment of time and energy that seems to be for naught, it is ultimately for further payout, right? We are looking farther into the future, trusting God with the outcome, doing the hard work today. So when God goes, "I'm going to give you a little look-see into what that ultimate outcome is and the person you're raising and the way I'm going to use him," you go, "Oh, Lord, thank you."
Man. In fact, you said something in your book. This is probably the question because it was the insight that I saw. And that was this statement that a woman's husband and children are more than just her family. They're an extension of her relationship with God.
Yes.
Wow. Wow. What were you driving at? Because that's just one of those stop and read that two or three times moments.
Boy, I tell you what, it was not until I had a family of my own that I realized the depth of Christ's love for us. I am convinced it is the closest that we come while we are on this earth to seeing that glory, to loving these people, to be willing to sacrifice for another person. I look at my children and I think, yes, I would take a bullet for that person. Yes, I would jump in front of a train for that person. And you think, if this is how much I love my family, how much more must Christ love us? And so it was really a defining moment for me. It was, in a way, a step toward understanding myself better in Christ, because I understood how deep his love was for me, because I saw how deep my love was for my children.
Sarah, the follow-up, the natural follow-up is the wife and the mother listening right now who doesn't feel that way. She's bitter. She doesn't feel like this is any kind of extension of God in my relationships with my husband or my family. She feels isolated, maybe. Maybe she stopped doing her profession, her vocation, which she derived a lot of meaning from. She's become that 30-something mom, maybe 40-something mom, and it's not gone that well. What do you say to her about getting focused on the right things? And how do you do that?
I think
it's a big question.
Yes. You know, for as much as we are reminded to live in the present, this is one circumstance in which I would say, have an eye toward the future. What you're doing now will not always result in immediate payoff. And sometimes we get those glimpses of heaven where we see siblings forgive one another, or we get that word of encouragement or a thank you note or a you're my hero note. And you think, thank you, Lord, I so needed this in this present moment. But taking your gaze toward the future and saying, Lord, what I'm doing now seems hard and it seems useless and pointless. It seems repetitive. But once I see the value of what I'm doing now, that transition to future payout, boy, that will change so much about the value of what you're doing.
Well, in addition to that, though, it's that, you know, if I could be bold enough, and we all have it, selfishness.
Yes.
I mean, that really is what that is pointing to. Mm-hmm. And people are probably, you know, even when I said that, because it's hitting a raw nerve.
Yes.
As a mom and as a dad, but more so as a mom, there's that having to lay your life down for others every day.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. And let me tell you, there were not, you know, I say this. This is one of those, I am a broken vessel, right? I love that verse from 2 Corinthians. I am a busted clay vessel, right? And let me tell you, I am willing to tell anyone about my cracks. And there were many an evening where I laid in bed grousing, thinking, my husband doesn't appreciate this work. My children don't appreciate this work. He's gone all the time. I have the hard work. We had just moved into a new house. I had these crawling babies around my ankles like the sand monster from the Star Wars movies. I thought, that's it. I'm not going to make it another day. I can't do it. And I had gone from this perfectly predictable life to feeling like, Lord, all of this work I'm doing is for naught, and I really just need a break. And it's when I realized that the Lord gives children to women for a reason. He wires us in such a way that there is that nature of inherent sacrifice in us, and He uses us for the completion of a miracle. When you say to yourself, when you realize that it is through a woman, through motherhood, that He brought His Son into the world in the first place, He could have chosen any other vessel. To have been part of that legacy, to me, helped me step outside where I was in that instance and go, okay, Lord, I feel selfish right now, but I have something not everybody gets to experience. And there are women who pray for this for years who don't get to experience this. And having that gratitude, taking it away from, I hate this temporary uncomfortableness, and going, Lord, You have given me an opportunity to participate in a miracle, that helped me tremendously.
Wow. That is hope.
Sarah Parshall Perry is talking with us today on Focus on the Family. Your host is Jim Daly, and Sarah's book is Mommy Needs a Raise Because Quitting's Not an Option.
Love it.
And my goodness, we've covered the joys and some of the heartaches of being a mom, and there's more here in just a moment. But let me encourage you to get a copy of this book from us at focusonthefamily.com/broadcast or call and make a donation, request a copy. And if you have questions, we have answers. Our number is 800, the letter A, and the word family. 800-232-6459.
Sarah, let me just turn to everybody. Okay, moms, roll your sleeves up. We're going to get into the hard stuff now, if that wasn't hard enough.
Oh, but that was the easy
stuff.
That was
the
easy
stuff. There was a chapter in your book where you talk about what you called mean moms.
Yes.
And you said women, these are women who shame each other over how perfect their families are and why their parenting method is best. And you guys constantly compare notes.
Yeah.
I'm sure you do it throughout the day.
Oh, yes. Yes.
So what is this mean mom thing, and what would you want to say to the mean mom listening?
Oh, my gosh. Well, here's what I believe. First of all, I don't think we women, we mothers in Christendom, are any less subject to this problem, right? This issue of comparison is sort of spotlighted in this journey of motherhood. And I think it's because we go from such a myriad of different perspectives and professions and life experiences to this one thing we all share in common. And it's this way of parenting and stewarding this one thing that makes us feel as though we have a better way of doing it. And so that ultimately stems from our insecurities, doesn't it?
Sure.
It's a question of how we see ourselves and what we worry about in our own journeys, because parenting is, it is a journey that can be fraught with insecurity. Every decision you make, is this the right one? Am I doing something wrong? Did I make a mistake here? And so when you amplify that and you put that in a group of women who've all made the same decision to have children in the first place, and yet they all have different ways of doing things, you really take those insecurities and you magnify all of them. So I think we have a tendency to do it in the church as well. And I have a tendency to specifically seek out women who don't promote that kind of a perspective, who are very open about their brokenness and their flaws. And let me tell you, I'm not great about PTA meetings. I'm a PTA member. I don't come to all the meetings. And I will tell you this, I don't beg for the meetings. I will send you store-bought cookies, and that's what I will do. And let me tell you, sometimes homework is, Jesse, sit next to me. We're going to read together, and I'm going to give you a Passover. It's not 2 hours of instruction after school, which some moms do. I have never posted anything on Pinterest. I never will, because I cannot cook or decorate like that. And let me tell you, I have shown up to school in my pajamas. And I walked in the front door, and then I had the secretary tell me, you know, you could have just dropped him off in Carline. And I said, but ladies, you would have missed the show.
Yeah, so that's good. I could see, as an attorney, you probably have the urge to yell objection at those PTA meetings.
Yes,
I object. I can hear that now. Hey, let me ask you this too. You mentioned the book, this concept, and I want you to explain it. Why the kindest mothers you know are also the most secure.
Oh,
that's
yes.
a beautiful statement. Connect those dots between kindness and security.
I think it goes for how we parent as well as our relationships with our children. And that nature of kindness and security in oneself allows us to be kind to other women who may have made different choices or who may be acting out or acting catty by virtue of their own insecurities. And it's given me, after these years, these 14 years on this parenting journey, an ability to recognize when somebody who presents a perfect image might actually be struggling with something behind the scenes.
Interesting.
And
yeah.
so I have gotten to the point now where the Lord has just blessed me with a level of security, and I know that I have committed this journey to the Lord. I do the best I can do. I commit the results to Him, and it's given me a freedom to be able to see other women who I recognize as struggling with that hyper-perfection as a manifestation of really thinking, oh, maybe I'm not good enough, and so I have to make it look like I'm really knocking everything out of the park. And it's hard. It's so hard. We have to give ourselves grace. And I think a lot of people who are on this mothering journey, a lot of these women are less graceful with themselves than they should be.
It's so true. And we talk about that so often here at Focus.
Yeah.
The role of laughter, I could tell you have a great sense of humor. I mean, that's
we
part
of it.
We do
love to laugh.
But in that context, for the woman who may not possess that kind of humor, for whatever reason, why is lightheartedness and some laughter very critical to mothering?
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, it's obvious, I guess. But
well, I think because your children will provide you ample opportunity for belly laughs if you can get out of your head enough to really be present with them and to enjoy the little people that they're becoming. It really is amazing how three children with the same DNA and the same parents have developed into these completely divergent personalities. All big, by the way. I'm sure also that doesn't surprise you. I have no wilting wallflowers in the bunch of my children. But we really have been able to weather the storms because we have been able to take a step back and go, Lord, this difficulty is temporary. This inconvenience is temporary. And I recognize the beauty, the humor in what you've given us for this time on this stage of the journey.
Such a healthy perspective. And sometimes it's hard to find that.
Yes.
But concentrate on it. Try
yes.
to zero in on it. And I think you'll be blessed. That's so good. Hey, right at the end here, you included a letter that
yeah.
you wrote kind of to your younger self about the motherhood journey ahead. What did that letter sound like? What did you put in there to yourself as
oh,
if
gosh.
You were, I don't know, a 17-year-old, 18-year-old?
Yes.
I don't know.
I think I began about talking about her 15% body fat, which she had at the time because she was working out 6 days a week uninterrupted by children and would take the train to New York on the weekends just to catch a show. So her life was very, very different than about 10 or 15 years later. I wish someone had told me some of the things that I wrote about in the book. And it wasn't as if there wasn't a plethora of real wisdom out there about mothering, but it was that nitty-gritty, that difficulty of making that transition and the things that are going to be important to you as a mom that used to seem very, very important to me as a career woman. Those are the things I really wanted to communicate to myself and what I'm hoping someone will pick up and read, particularly people who've gone that job route first, who haven't immediately yeah. gotten married and had kids right out of college or right after high school. So one of the things that I included was to slow down. It really, for me, has been an exercise in patience, and not just patience with my children, but patience with myself. I have a nature that tends toward rushing, to tend toward high achievement. And so I would always be rushing. We'd be running here to the doctor's appointment or here to a play date or here. It was a nature walk because we were going to do a science experiment and we were going to press leaves between books. And it was interesting. I was on a walk one day with two of my three. I wasn't yet pregnant with my third. And I had little Gracie, who was a toddler at the time, in the stroller, and Noah was pushing along beside me. And in a desperate attempt to get exercise, I was pushing very fast. And he could not keep up with me. And he was growing very frustrated. And I slowed down, and he put his hand on the stroller. And as if the Lord knew I needed a reminder, An elderly man came walking in the opposite direction, and as he passed, he said, "You are doing a good job, Mom."
Oh, wow.
And I went, oh, to this day, this is, gosh, 12 years later, and I still remember it with such perfect clarity. And I thought, oh, man, slowing down is something I wish someone had told me at the time. All the things like the perfect house and hurrying up to finish dinner and hurrying up to get all the laundry done. Oh, honey, it will be there tomorrow. Do not speed through these precious moments because they will not last. And I think also having grace with oneself, being forgiving, forgiving not just with your kids, which comes easier, I believe, than sometimes forgiving ourselves. When we have such passionate love for them, sometimes, and I have lost many a fragile item to those three little crumb hustlers, okay? I could fill volumes with what I have lost in my years of parenting.
I love it.
But having forgiveness and grace with ourselves and going, man, I really messed that up. Or I was really harsh in my tone. And then going to your kids and feeling that freedom to say, Noah, you know what? Mommy was really snappy and she did not mean to get snappy at you. Will you forgive me? And by doing that, we actually model the correct behavior for our kids. Yeah. I saw him go on to exercise that forgiveness with his siblings. And you think, see a little grace for myself and my kids can have grace with each other. So
it comes out.
It really does.
It is so good. And Sarah, you have packed this great book, Mommy Needs a Raise, with so many of these wonderful insights. This, I'll tell the husbands out there, this is the book you should buy for your wife as a present. Really?
I hope so. I think there are moms that would really be encouraged by somebody who was on the path
in there. So, and if you're the mom that, you know, your husband may not buy it for you, just call us here at Focus on the Family. And in fact, just make a gift to Focus for any amount. We'll send you a copy of Sarah's book as our way of saying thank you. If you can be a monthly supporter to help us help other families, to strengthen those families in Christ, be part of the team and do that on a monthly basis, and we'll send you a copy of the book as well. And if you can't afford it, we'll get it in your hands. Others have, I'm sure, will give enough to take care of that. But Sarah, thank you for the encouragement to moms, helping them through tough times, that there is light at the end of the tunnel.
Yes, there
and,
is.
that your days are not wasted, that what you're doing is the most critical job that anybody can do. And it's not being an attorney. And for us dads, it's probably not what we're doing either. It's every day spending time with those kids.
Yes, it is.
And grooming them for a life of hopefully godly work and character.
Absolutely.
Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me. Mm.
And if you're a mom or a dad, we do hope you'll contact us about Sarah's wonderful book, Mommy Needs a Raise. Donate and get your copy at focusonthefamily.com/broadcast or when you call 800-232-6459. 800, the letter A and the word family. Coming up next time, Cynthia Tobias explains how to get along with family or coworkers who have a different way of thinking and learning than you.
How many of you know someone who is definitely not like you? You know they don't think like you. Did you also know this? They don't want to think like you.
That's next time on Focus on the Family. And remember, when you get in touch, let us know how you're listening on our website, through our mobile app, or on our podcast feed. I'm John Fuller, and on behalf of Jim Daly and the entire team, join us next time as we help you and your family thrive.
Get your daily dose of family-strengthening encouragement anytime, anywhere with the new Focus on the Family broadcast app, featuring exclusive content and offline listening. Get it today at Google Play or the App Store.